Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for hanging with us. I appreciate it. Candidates for public office in Maryland, including those running for Congress and the Maryland legislature, have until tonight at 9 o'clock to register with the Board of Elections to get their name on the June primary ballot. Governor Wes Moore and Lieutenant Governor Aruna Miller have secured their place on the ballot, along with Democrats Eric Felber and frequent candidate Ralph Jaffe. Senator Steve Hershey, the Republican minority leader in the Maryland Senate, announced this morning that he will not seek the Republican nomination for governor. After former Republican Governor Larry Hogan declined to run, there was a lot of speculation that Senator Hershey would throw his hat into the ring. Eight other Republicans, including Dan Cox, who lost in the general election to Wes Moore in 2022, and businessman Ed Hale have, as of this morning, registered to enter the primary. That election will take place June 23rd. Early voting begins in 107 days. The Maryland House of Delegates has a bill in committee that would extend the filing deadline in the event that the legislature draws new congressional district lines. Advocates for that, including the governor and the Speaker of the House, have not yet given up hope. Senate President Bill Ferguson remains steadfast in his opposition to redistricting, and as far as he's concerned, once the filing deadline passes tonight, any consideration of redistricting is moot. We will begin our series of conversations with the candidates for governor, the House of Representatives, and other offices in just a couple of weeks here on Midday. And today, my guest is Isabel Mercedes Cumming, who has served as the Inspector General for the City of Baltimore for the past 8 years. Her investigation into poor working conditions at the Department of Public Works led to major changes there. She has promoted new internal controls over the city's payroll system and the finance department, and her oversight of other city agencies has uncovered and in some cases recovered millions of dollars of taxpayer money that was being misspent. Recently, the Inspector General has alleged that the administration of Mayor Brandon Scott has blocked her access to city records that she says she's always had access to in the past. The Citizen Advisory Board, which oversees the Office of Inspector General, agrees. The 11 members of that board have called on the administration to unredact financial records that the IG has tried to access and work more collaboratively with the IG's office. I spoke with the mayor about this when he was on the show earlier this month, and today I'm happy to welcome Inspector General Cumming back to the show to share her perspective. Isabel Mercedes Cumming joins me in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Madam Inspector General, good to see you again. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks very much for having me.
So let's start with what happened. You're alleging that for the first time in 8 years since you started this job, all of a sudden, much to your surprise, you were disallowed access to records. How come?
That's a very good question. I think it's really important to look back on the timeline because so much has happened so quickly. I was in the process of doing an investigation on Sidestep, and I can only tell you that because the mayor mentioned it to you, too.
And Sidestep is a youth program run by MONSEE, which is the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement.
Correct. And we had already issued a report on October 21st where we found, and it was a management alert, and in that we found issues of poor internal controls, not following, not invoicing, you know, state, different things. So that was part one, and part two was going to be the second half, which is following the money. So on October 22nd, I asked for records. I asked for records of where the money went with this youth program. And I think it's very important to note that when I first asked for the records, we did ask for juvenile records as to who went to where. We immediately got a letter back from the law department saying juvenile records are confidential. And being a prosecutor for 20 years, even though I am now an inspector general, and inspector generals are about oversight, it wasn't worth that battle to me. So we said, fine, don't give us the juvenile, just substitute numbers for the juveniles. We don't need the names. It didn't matter. So, and they said, no, you can't have any of that. Okay, that's fine. I left that go. And that was the last time we ever asked for, quote, juvenile records. Going forward, though,
and that's last fall we're talking about.
Correct.
We're talking about October.
October. But in addition to those records, I also asked for a tremendous amount of financial records from third-party vendors as to who were supporting the children. And those financial records as to where the money goes is what I cared about. And it went from October 22nd till January 16th when I got the records. And that happened to be the Friday before Martin Luther King's birthday.
And that's longer than it usually takes.
Yes. And it, mind you, this was not a subpoena. This was a request, because I am the inspector general. So we always have to, we do request, because, so then.
But you can also do subpoenas.
I can.
Right.
And I had done that, and I had to do that once before with a program called Safe Streets. No, it wasn't Safe Streets. It was Slack, their phone records. I was asked to issue a subpoena, and I did. And when I issued the subpoena, I got all the records, and that was in March. When I issued a second subpoena, again for Slack, this time I got redacted records, and this was now June. I was so concerned about getting redacted records that I wrote a letter to the solicitor, and I said, because she said the reason I got redacted records is because it was an MPIA. And I said,
that's the Maryland Public Information Act.
Correct.
But now we're talking about two separate things.
Right. It's all one agency.
Right. But the Slack request and the subpoena is different than the simple request without a subpoena.
Correct.
For the financial records of the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement.
Right. But I think it's important to note that I originally, when I did a subpoena, I got unredacted records the first time. The second time, when they requested a subpoena again, this time I got redacted records. And I sent a letter, and in the letter I explained that there's a difference between these things. And I actually asked for, as the solicitor, if you did not agree with me, I would like outside counsel. And I was told, no, we understand what you do. You don't need outside counsel. So then we kept going, but the issue always bothered me. So I have an independent advisory board that the citizens elected for me to have by 87% in 2022. So I brought the issue of this issue, and I actually did a position paper, and the position paper was actually called it's a position paper, OIG's Access to Records. And I presented this to my board on December 3rd. My board unanimously...
Okay, so you had made the request in October.
Correct.
By December 3rd, you had not received
anything.
The information
Correct.
That you requested. You went to your board. It's an 11-member advisory board. And you gave the position about, here's what I'm entitled to.
Correct. And they completely agreed... And it's funny because when I published this to the public, because I work for the public, one reporter actually called me and he said, who would ever put MPIA and the OIG together? And I said, well, there are people that do. So that's why the position paper was issued, as well as another paper on that was done by the Association of Inspector Generals on privilege. Both of those got posted and published on December 4th. Moving forward, so finally on this January 16th, I get back, first time ever, financial documents, 200 pages redacted. And these were not juvenile records. These were financial records. According to the attorneys, they were financial records, and there were perhaps some health records. But that was unheard of to me. So what I did is I spent that weekend, myself and the deputy, we pulled all 200 redactions And we issued a subpoena to the law department on that Tuesday because Monday was a holiday. So on Tuesday, we issued a subpoena to the law department and we actually served it. And it was due to us on the 22nd of January. So now is where it gets very interesting. So on the 22nd, I do not get any records back because they had the records. All they had to do was lift the redaction. Okay. So then on the 24th comes an unheard of press release that said that on a Saturday before the snow thing, saying that there was issues that somebody in the from the law department had done unauthorized access into the law department.
I can tell you exactly what it said. Okay. It said earlier this week, a lawyer in this is a press release from the mayor's office.
So earlier the same week that I subpoenaed them.
Same week of the subpoena. Mm-hmm. A lawyer in the city's law department discovered an unauthorized account had access to their files, including those protected by the confidential attorney-client and work product privileges. As a result, a permissions audit was conducted, which discovered an account associated with the Inspector General's office had gained unapproved and unfettered access to the lawyer's legally protected confidential work product and communications. So they were surprised to find that someone from your office had somehow gotten access to correspondence, to interactions between the city law department and the client, which is the city, and that client attorney-client privilege mm-hmm. between the law department and the city essentially is enforced the same way that a personal lawyer would have attorney-client privilege. If I had a lawyer and I had conversations and emails and whatnot with a lawyer about my case, that is protected. Those are protected conversations. So that's their position.
That's their take. Usually with government attorneys, it's one city. There's not a client. But I cannot tell you beyond that, Tom, because I do not know anything beyond it. I have asked for details. My board has asked. We have gotten nothing beyond the press release. Okay, so that happened. And then on the 27th, that's when I showed the public the many redactions that I got. So on Tuesday after the snowstorm, that's when I published the first picture. So that was the 27th.
And they were published in the Baltimore Brew, example, and other places, mm-hmm. With all these pages.
Plus, I held up the documents.
Everything blacked out.
It was pretty shocking. Mm-hmm. It's because these are financial records, and my job, mandated by the public, is to go after waste, fraud, and financial abuse. So the next thing that happens is on February 3rd, there's an opinion that's issued to a Baltimore City senator and asking a question. Now, the law that was happening that he was asking the question on was a law dealing with Baltimore County and whether they could expand their inspector general to include education.
And this is Senator Antonio Hayes requested from the Attorney General's office. This is the state Attorney General's office. Mm-hmm. Anthony Brown is, of course, our Attorney General. This letter is not from the AG himself, Mr. Brown. It is from an Assistant Attorney General named Shawnee Harrison, and said, "You've requested advice on whether or not a local law or charter provision can give a local inspector general access to records that are required to be kept confidential under the Maryland Public Information Act, MPIA. So that's the request that Senator Hayes made to the Attorney General's office, not to the city solicitor, not to you, just the Attorney General. Yeah. The PIA, Ms. Harrison talks about mandatory exceptions, which include personnel records, medical information, and information about an individual's finance. which evidently the city is contending in the case of the information you were asking for, it falls under these mandatory exceptions.
Well, that's what she wrote.
Right.
Yes, and I didn't see the word education or Baltimore County or anything like that, which is what the question was supposed to. But moving on, the next thing I know, and that, mind you, I was never told of that letter. I was never told. And next thing I know, I get a letter from the chief of staff, which is telling myself and my board that we have a formal opinion from the official opinion from the Office of the Attorney General.
And this is J.D. Merrill, who's the chief of staff to Mayor Brandon Scott.
On February 6th. And he's attaching both the letter, dated February 3rd, and the analysis by the solicitor, which was dated that this same day. And I got this at 10:45 a.m. So they're telling me now that I have now, they must provide formal notice that today, effective immediately, the administration is taking action based on the solicitor's recommendation to come into compliance with state law. And this includes the removal of direct access to records, files, communications, including digital platforms like Workday, which include protected information.
So they've had their IT department make it impossible for people from your department to get into the system anymore. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And when we come back,
I'm not done.
We are, of course, you're not done. And this is a very complicated thing, but I want to try to spell it out as clearly as we possibly can for our listeners. But when we come back, we're going to hear what the mayor has to say about this, because I did ask the mayor about it just a couple of weeks ago when he was on Midday. But Isabel Mercedes Cumming is with me here in Studio A today. She is the Inspector General of the City of Baltimore. You can join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. We will sift through all of this on the other side of a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your local NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the show, longtime Baltimore Sun columnist and former Midday host, Dan Rodericks will join me to talk about his newest play. It's the third one in his trilogy of plays about the place that we all call home. It's called No Mean City, Baltimore, 1966. It explores a pivotal moment in our city's history from the perspective of a writer and broadcaster who has had an unparalleled impact on our town. We'll also talk about President Trump's State of the Union speech. So Dan Rodericks will talk about plays and politics tomorrow with me here on Midday. And if you just joined us today, my guest is Isabel Mercedes Cumming. She's the Inspector General of the City of Baltimore. We're talking about the dispute between her office and the office of Mayor Brandon Scott. They disagree about the level of access that the Inspector General should have to certain kinds of records when it comes to investigating the city. You are welcome to join us. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. So, Inspector General, I want to play a clip from a conversation I had with Mayor Scott on the 5th of February, which is right around the time that all these letters were flying back and forth. And basically, the mayor is contending that the attorney general in this letter that was a response to Senator Hayes says that what you're asking for is not allowed under state law. Here's a bit of what the mayor and I talked about.
Well, I'll just tell you this very simply, Tom. She still has access to records for her investigations. As you know, I'm a big believer in transparency, but I'm also a big, even bigger believer in following the law. I want you to understand, because I know this, there's two separate things with the OIG and the law department. One, first and foremost, the only access that was cut off for the inspector general was two law department's lawyers and their files. Because, Tom, as you know, attorney-client information is privileged. No lawyer that graduated from any law school, no attorney that is worth their salt would allow anyone to have unfettered access to their client's information, that to include advice that they're giving their client. That was discovered because a law department lawyer went into a file and saw someone on the file that had access to a file that was a privileged document, that was an individual that works for the inspector general, that was not tied to any investigation. And in fact, they looked back into that their information, and that person had access to all of their files going back 17 plus years, longer than the OIG has even been with the city of Baltimore. The actions that they took cut that off, and that off solely because your folks at YPR would never allow someone from to be looking at the advice that you all's lawyers are giving you, opinions and all of these things. That is simply not okay.
So, Madam Inspector General, I had the mayor, gave him an opportunity to speak his piece. That's part of what he had to say a few weeks ago. And so now I want to ask you and give you the opportunity to respond. He's basically saying, my hands are tied, the state law supersedes any city charter, simply can't. There are some records even the IG is not privy to.
Well, a lot of that will be decided in court, but I think what's important is there are three misstatements by the mayor. One, the Office of the Inspector General has been around for 21 years, since 2005. Two, nobody on my staff has been there for 17 years, so nobody could have done what he said. Three, how would they know what investigations I have going on? Because I mean, he's positive it didn't have to, it wasn't with an active investigation, but how would he know that?
Yeah, you don't discuss active investigations.
No, everybody knows that I neither confirm nor deny. But so it's interesting.
Well, what about the fact that the contention of the city here is that state law basically says, now again, the letter that came from Ms. Harrison, an associate inspector general, assistant attorney general, rather, in Anthony Brown's office, is not an official opinion.
Correct.
And Anthony Brown has taken pains to qualify and clarify that.
He called me.
It's not an official opinion, but so there's a difference between an advisory letter and an official opinion. Yet this advisory letter basically says that there are some things that the inspector general isn't privy to, even if it's requested under a subpoena. So what?
Well, see, that issue in law has not been decided, period. So we're going to get to what we're going to do, but I haven't gotten there yet. So it's funny because when he spoke to you, he was aware of, because this letter came to me telling me, because he was telling you at that time that we weren't cut off from very much. But now, the next day, I get a letter telling us that we've pretty much been cut out of everything. Because when he spoke to you, he said it was the law department. Well, the letter that I got said that it was a significant change, and it was direct access to records, files, communications, digital platforms like Workday. So that's why I'm here. That's why, I mean, we're here because just finished my timeline here. So then by the next day, by 2-6, I get this letter from telling me that because of this opinion, and mind you, they called it opinion. It says recent opinion. In fact, the word opinion was used in the solicitor's analysis 5 times. Okay, there's a big difference between, and that's what the attorney general told me. There's a big difference between an attorney general opinion, which takes 9 months to a year to do, in a letter like this. I think in the brew he wrote that it was a 2L, could have written it. So, all right.
Second year law school.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, so what happened, and we continued moving forward. I have to meet with my board. And we had a big presentation to my board that the public could watch. And that happened on February 10th, where I outlined to my board what has happened. And we outlined the importance that the Office of the Inspector General has become part of city government in that we are the hotlines. We've gotten over 5,000. We run the whistleblower program. We run the electronic technology use policy. We help with the workplace violence. We do complaints from citizens. Now, the problem is, in when you walk into City Hall, there's a big sign that says, your identity is protected, because Baltimore has a reputation of being retaliatory. And the problem is, since January 24th, when that press release came out, I can't protect the public anymore, because a lot of people have come forward to me, as well as law enforcement partners that have brought me information that I know that now other people can be reviewing, and I lost my watchdog. So the person that...
Okay, now you're losing me here.
Okay.
Because the issue is whether or not you have access to these records. Right.
Now, the issue is that they took away my ability to get the direct access for
and
the
so
records.
Are you saying that direct access to all records has now been suspended by the city?
Yes.
So you don't feel like you could ever request or subpoena any kind of record under any circumstances, given the mayor's the office of
for 20 some years this office has had direct access to records. We have, and I called prior inspector generals. We have had direct access to records. We don't have that anymore
at all.
Correct.
Okay. And you have, in fact, today you're going to announce that well, you can announce because it's happened, you have filed suit.
I have.
In court to sue for these records. So you're saying, because in the letter to Senator Hayes, the Assistant Attorney General says it is a matter of decided law, but you're contesting that contention, and you've brought a lawsuit. So tell us about the lawsuit that you brought. What is your contention in that suit?
So when I met with my board on the 10th, they gave me the authority to go forward and to find pro bono attorneys so that I can, because I have a subpoena out now, and they have failed to even produce any records in my subpoena. Now, the subpoena power of the Inspector General is in Article 10, and it is very clear that I can subpoena any records, and they have decided not to respond, and they have failed. They didn't move to quash. They did nothing. So I am now suing the city for the records, for the sidestep records that they will not give us so that I can do my job. My job is to ferret out waste, fraud, and abuse. I am in the middle of an investigation, and they are not allowing me to move forward.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest is Isabel Mercedes Cumming. She is the Inspector General of the City of Baltimore. We're talking about a very strong disagreement between her office and the office of Mayor Brandon Scott about what records should be available to the Inspector General when she investigates waste, fraud, and abuse. So are there, in your opinion, any records that should either legally, morally, ethically remain confidential? When I've spoken to people at City Hall about this, they say, well, what about, you know, medical records? What about personnel records? Even financial and payroll records? There are some records, you know, for city employees and for people, vendors and stuff, who do things with the city, have business with the city, that should be protected by confidentiality, particularly when it comes to interactions with the law department.
At this point in time, that's part of the lawsuit, and I have two amazing attorneys that are doing this pro bono to help, because this lawsuit is actually on behalf of the citizens and the voters of Baltimore City, because the voters voted in 2018 to make an independent office that goes after waste, fraud, and abuse. And that office, they also gave subpoena power. And that office has done the job now as an independent office now for 8 years. And so what has happened is we can no longer do the job that the citizens gave us. The citizens also made it so that I have an advisory board, an independent advisory board. And that happened in 2022. And that was done by 87%. So there's a mandate by the voters to have an effective, efficient Office of the Inspector General. And the decisions that have been made by the law department and by the administration are paramountly against that. I mean, fundamentally against that. And so we are moving forward to establish law into the Office of the Inspector General and to ensure that we can move forward. And my attorneys are from two different law firms.
And they're working for free.
They're pro bono,
so it's not costing the city any money. It's not costing your office any money.
I have to give a shout out. One, Mark Stitchell, he's of counsel at RMS. And then we have Anthony May, and Anthony is at Nusanoff. They are amazing, diligent, hardworking, incredibly respected attorneys who are doing this because they believe in what this office has done, and most importantly, the mandate that the people have given, that they want a watchdog.
And I've just gotten a copy of this lawsuit, you know, right before we went on the air. And it has to do with the city's, your contention that the city is refusing to comply with legal subpoenas.
Correct.
You're saying that despite the city charter's clear and unambiguous language, and I'm reading from the suit that you filed this morning in court, the city has suddenly and publicly refused to comply with subpoenas issued by the OIG. So a subpoena, as we said earlier in the show, sort of ratchets it up a little bit from just a request. But if the city's position is that they don't have to comply with these subpoenas, I guess because state law says there are certain records that simply aren't covered by that. There are certain records that will always need to be confidential. If that's the case, if you lose this lawsuit, if the court decides that the city's right, are you saying that it's impossible for you to do your job under that? I mean, are there workarounds here? Are there ways of your using other information or most of the information you're asking for, with the exception of these confidential records that, you know, for whatever reason, state law disallows you to see?
I think it makes my job almost impossible. And that is why, you know, unfortunately, you know, there's something called collateral damage. And unfortunately, because of that collateral damage, we now have four inspector generals throughout the state of Maryland, the four local inspector generals that have all come together because the MPI law, which is different than my subpoena, the MPI law needs to be...
That's the public information.
Correct. The public information disclosure law needs to include inspector generals as an exception. And so what's happening now in Annapolis is they're trying to bring a bill to change that law because Megan Lamarzi from Montgomery County, Kelly Madigan from Howard County, Stephen Quisenberry from Baltimore County, and myself have all been impacted by this. So that is another separate issue where we need the public.
But
because that issue affects 2.8 million Marylanders.
And again, I'm sure you can't comment because it's a matter of litigation as we speak, because this lawsuit has been filed.
But, it has been filed.
But it seems what you're saying is, and I'm not a lawyer, but it seems what you're saying is that current law does allow for confidentiality, and you're asking that law to be changed so that the confidentiality is accepted in the case of inspector generals.
My lawsuit involves subpoenas, okay? This issue with my four inspector generals involves the MPIA. Okay, so they're different. And I think, but it's important. Very important, Mark Stichel is actually with RKW. I can't believe I mispronounced
that,
this.
Yeah. That's the law firm
I know,
of Mr. Stichel. And again, they're going to bring this suit. They have brought this suit. Against the city, and you brought this with a couple of members of your advisory board. They are citizens. They are taxpayers. We have an email from Gwen who says, "I'm a Baltimore resident. It's been inspiring to me to see Mayor Scott's rise to power and his success in his tenure as mayor. Even more so because of his roots in the city and his genuine care for the city and our people. But these recent developments are very worrying." To me. We also have, Madam Inspector General, a comment from a listener who does not wish to identify themselves, who says, "Why are you using your personal Facebook page to make your arguments and sharing others' critical comments related to your official authority rather than on the Inspector General's official Facebook page?" So we have this coming from a listener. Does it matter? Should it matter whose Facebook page this kind of information is disseminated?
That's already been decided by the Ethics Board. That was decided back when we were doing the labor situation. I think it's what is important is the public gets the information. And so we have, this what's happening and what, I have to keep doing my job. So tomorrow we have another big report coming out will be moving forward. And then I have another report after that one the following week. And then we start with these new, the new way that we, are trying to change the way the office has done. And I think it's important that when we looked back on our cases, that almost 100 cases would have been impacted by this. And we calculated, over 100 cases and over $40 million by us not being able to do our job. To be the watchdog of taxpayer monies and not to be able to look inside city government at where the money's going. That's an interesting quagmire we have.
And we'll talk about that on the other side of a quick break because it is an interesting dimension of this that evidently these records have been available to you heretofore and then all of a sudden they're not. We'll talk about why that might be with Baltimore Inspector General Isabel Mercedes Cumming, who will be with me until the top of the hour. You can join us at 410-662-8780 or email midday@wypr.org. When we come back, we're going to hear from Robert, who's on the line in Baltimore. But before we go to a break, each week here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who have lost their lives to violence in our city and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 17 people have been identified as victims of homicide in Baltimore. Police have identified 3 of the people who were killed they've identified 4 people who were killed last week. They are Monteo Rogers, age 39, Andrew Seeley, age 36, Keyshawn Lake, age 24, and Tiana Pierce. She was 15 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to 88.1 WYPR, your local NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest is Baltimore's Inspector General, Isabel Mercedes Cumming. The IG's office responds to complaints and tips that citizens leave on the office's hotline. Last year, the office received nearly 900 complaints, 246 of which were called in anonymously. IG Cumming estimates that her office identified almost $11 million in waste or savings last year. You can join us at 410-662-8780, our email midday at wypr.org. We're talking about a dispute between the IG's office and the office of Mayor Brandon Scott. The IG has filed a lawsuit today to contest the administration's refusal to comply with the subpoena that she has issued about asking for particular records. Let's go back to the phones, Madam Inspector General. I'd like to hear from Robert, who's calling from Baltimore. Welcome to the program with Isabel Mercedes Cumming.
Thank you for accepting my call. My call is just three things, if she has time to answer. One, the board that you appointed, how did they get appointed your role? Secondarily, who checked the law firms to see if they had conflict of interest? And are the alleged allegations that they've had fundraisers for people who may challenge the mayor part of a team that you engage? And then thirdly, are you a member and of the IG's standard? And when do you leave office? You're non-elected. And how long do you get to serve in office? Not saying your board appointed you, but when does a fresh set of eyes that run a significant asset to our community change hands, change focus, change direction?
Okay, Robert, thank you for that call. I appreciate it. So let's take those. There's a lot there from Robert to unpack. The 11-member advisory board, how do those people come to serve on that board?
Two of the members are the deans of the law school. The rest come from the city council promotes names, and then they either select them out of a hat or they put forth a name, and then it gets joined with another name, and the head of the ethics board actually picks the name out of a hat. So we try to take out as much politics as possible. So there were people that actually applied for the job, and then we presented to, like, if District 1. We present all the district names to District 1. They either pick a person or they pick it out of a hat. Some did both. Some did either way. Then we have a person for District 1. We have another person for District 2, same way, and then we put District 1 and District 2's names together, and the ethics board person picks that out of a hat. So we end up with seven that way. We end up with one person from the Association of CPAs and one person from the Association of Inspector General. Certified Fraud Examiners. So it's kind of this
CPAs
very...
CPAs are Certified Public Accountants, and yeah. Certified Fraud Examiners are people who get certified to examine fraud.
So that
fraud.
Makes up the board.
Okay.
My term is six years. I am the first Inspector General in history to ever finish a term. No Inspector General before me made it past 37 months. And I am on my second term, and I believe it finishes in 2030. So you're stuck with that.
And in 2030, they will decide whether or not to reappoint you should you want to be,
I will be much too old.
You will be much too old.
We will let new eyes as he wants to
start. There will be new
start.
Eyes okay. in 2030. And then the caller brings up a question about conflicts of interest with right. the law firm mm-hmm. or the people who are associated with the law firms mm-hmm. that are putting forth this lawsuit. Mm-hmm. He's raising the specter that somehow these law firms are affiliated with people who might be political opponents of the mayor. Any reason to believe that that's
the case? I don't
believe
that. Yeah.
I mean, did you ask them about that? Did you vet them in that regard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Talk to me about the city's contention that the term they use is unfettered access to the records.
Yeah.
And the mayor talks about his commitment to transparency, Something he says he's, you know, and there's some evidence for it that he's, you know, been, he's embraced transparency since he was a member of the Public Safety Committee and the chair of the Public Safety Committee back in his council days. Is there anything, because what I'm interested in is a possibility of a solution here. Mm-hmm. The mayor has called for your advisory board to meet with folks from the law department and come up with a set of protocols that everybody can live with. Do you see a possibility in that regard?
I think sometimes what needs to happen is there needs to be, I think we've had like a new department form, the chief administrative officer. Okay, that didn't exist when I first started. So there's an entire group that doesn't seem to understand what the Office of the Inspector General is as far as oversight. Because the first time I've ever heard that word, unfettered access, came from that group. And I think it's important that the Office of the Inspector General does not have unfettered access. We have direct access. My IT person had to constantly fill out access forms. There was no secret at all about what he was able to do. The IT department was well aware, and everything he did, they could see, because they had the exact.
And it was the IT thing that made this latest kerfluffle blow up. I mean, because someone from your office was using, you know, a computer to get into.
That's what
records?
They allege.
I'm telling you what they're saying.
But the mayor also told you that they had been doing that for 17 years. There's nobody that's been here for 17 years that could have done that. So that's not
possible. But that's how it works. In other words, you have an IT person that gives access to whatever records you need to get into.
No, that's not how it works.
So what is your IT
person
actually, do?
We actually have to have an investigation. We fill out forms. We actually submit that to him so that there's no, I mean, it's almost like you would think that we sit there and we read people's emails. No, that's not what we do. We have an investigation. We go in. All of this is documented. Everything is documented. It's been documented since I started. And this unfettered access is just not true. Unfettered means there's no restrictions, no controls. We have controls. We have limitations. They know exactly which ability he has. So, I mean, they actually used him on certain investigations, and he actually trained their IT person on doing this. So there's no secret. I mean, nothing has changed for 8 years. I can't stress to you how important that is, that everything just started when I went into one department to do something, and then all of a sudden everything around me is changing.
Right.
So.
And the clock is changing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So we are,
I could go on.
Yes. So we don't have any more time to talk about it today, but very interested in keeping an eye on what happens in this lawsuit, of course, seems to be the next step in that process. Isabel Mercedes Cumming, thank you for coming in. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, my guest is Dan Rodericks. He's published more than 6,600 columns in his long career with The Sun. We're going to talk about a new play that he's written. We're going to talk about the State of the Union address. And coming up tonight, you can hear NPR's live coverage of that address right at 9 o'clock here on WIPR. Fresh Air is up next. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR.